pain in the ass.
Unique New York.
Unique New York.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Welcome back to the official comics podcast of geeksofdoom.com. That is the Comics of Doom podcast. My name is Justin Vactor. I'm here with Mr. Henchman 21 himself, Chris McDavid.
Greetings and salutations.
Mr. MK2Face, Hunter Camp.
Hello.
Mr. W. Gillis, Willie Gillis.
Greetings.
Mr. Guy Jen Abrams.
That is one tasty cheeseburger.
And we have the best person we've ever had in the history of the podcast, Miss Eve of Doom from Geeks of Doom and from the Flicks of Doom podcast. Hello, Eve.
Hello.
We were honored that you can join us. So thank you for that. Eve got a chance to read our book of the month, which is Asterios Polyp. So she will be joining us for our little talk on that. And speaking of books of the month, we'd like to thank our sponsors, InStockTrades.com and DCBService.com, for sponsoring this episode and every episode. If you wanted to, you know, after you listen to our review of Asterios Polyp and you want to get it, you can head over to InStockTrades.com and get it for $22.46. That's 25% off the standard retail price. And while you're there, you can also look for our next Doom of the Month, which is going to be Scott Pilgrim. We're going to be doing all six volumes, so you can get those over at InStock Trades for a great deal at InStockTrades.com. They also have 9,000 trades in stock, 37% off the standard retail price of most books, and orders over $50 get you free shipping. Once you're there, you can also visit their sister site, DCBService.com, to get all your monthly books at 40% off. You can track your orders online, and you can get monthly specials of up to 75% off. Most number one issues, if you get them in time, they will be like 75 cents or 99 cents. So you can't beat those deals at DCBService.com. So we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the episode. And if you don't go over there, then you're going to pay full price. So stop doing that.
Haters going to hate.
So this week's news starts off with a little Comic-Con talk that we didn't get to have last week because we were waiting on Chris to come back. So
somebody had a little flight. Somebody read me. Meaning me.
Yep. So we're going to go ahead and jump into some news. Why don't we start off with the Spider-Man panel? What happened in the Spider-Man panel, Chris? I didn't make it to that one, actually. So.
That was a good way to end the whole con, kind of middle of Sunday afternoon. The big news out of that is that Amazing Spider-Man is going to move back to two issues a month instead of the three that they're currently at, and they're dropping all the writers, and it's just going to be Dan Slott writing every issue. Art on it is going to be by Humberto Ramos. Stefano Caselli, who was currently doing Secret Warriors, had a good run on Avengers Initiative. And Marcos Martin. It's going to start with issue 648, and then every issue is going to be $3.99 from now on, and it's going to be 30 issues for the main story with a 9-page backup in every issue. So should be getting at least bang for the buck on that mark or on that point. So
is it Dan Slott on the backups also?
He's going to be doing most of them, I believe. But I think they are going to have other people writing the backups.
That's cool.
So, should be interesting, kind of change of pace. Maybe save some people some money, because instead of paying, I guess, $12 a month, it'll only be $8 a month, or however much it was. What was it?
So. Well, at least, and they didn't mention anything about price changes, because I remember hearing a little something.
I think
upping the page count and giving it $4.99.
Yeah. No, it's not going to be. They didn't say $4.99. It's $3.99 was the price point that they said during the panel.
Yeah.
Because I think because it is a price increase, because it used to be $2.99.
See, I thought it was $3.99 recently.
Well, yeah, it was
for the Grim Hunt.
Like,
it was.
The Grim Hunt was kind of where they increased the price. But before that, it was only $2.99. Now it's just going to be $3.99. But they are increasing the page count, so I think you're getting
the money for
that extra dollar.
The Grim Hunt was increased in page count too, I believe.
Exactly.
There was,
three
stories per issue, I think.
Right. So I think it all works out in the end, and see if Slott's single voice changes the book as rather than having a bunch of different writers on there, but. It's been a good book for 2 years. So, going into year three after the brand new day, so.
I'm really going to miss Joe Kelly's story. And I think he was the one who did Grim Hunt, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I
believe so. Yeah, he was a good writer on it.
I was going to say, he's all the ones that were my favorites were always by him, so.
Yeah.
That's the biggest travesty, in my opinion, but.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm good with the two, and then every month to 2 months they have a new miniseries anyway, so it's not like you don't get enough Spider-Man.
Right, and maybe they can find a place for Joe Kelly to write one of those minis. So
yeah, that'd be nice. So next up, I'll talk a little bit about the DC panels. Throughout all of them, there was quite a few things mentioned. One of the big things that I was really excited for was the Splash Speed the Flash Speed Force book, that was kind of accidentally announced. He was trying not to say it, and then it kind of. He kind of looked at Dan DiDio, Geoff Johns, that is, kind of looked at Dan DiDio, and he's just like, just freaking say it. I mean, you almost pretty much said it anyways. And so the Speed Force book is going to be kind of like the Flash family book, where it's going to have Wally is going to finally be talked about, and Bart, and it's going to have all the other Flashes that aren't talked about, and the regular Flash actually talked about. So you're going to have a book for the Wally West. So I'm sure Vector's excited about that.
Yeah.
Which is that I think is actually going to lead up to the event. I can't remember what it's called now off the top of my head. It's a
Flashpoint.
Yeah, Flashpoint. And that's going to be, I guess, another series. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they're going to be doing Flash Origins, Secret Origin as well, coming up. On top of that, there's also going to be a Sinestro Origin. I believe it's going to be a straight-to-trade. I'm not sure. If it's not, then it's going to be a miniseries that gets collected in trade later on. But it's going to have Ivan Reis on art as well, and Geoff Johns writing it. So I'm really super pumped about that as well. Anybody else have any excitement about the Sinestro Origins?
I would say that Sinestro is one of my favorite villains, so I am excited for that as well.
So that was pretty cool. And then how many Smallville fans do we have on the show right now?
I watch it. I like it.
Chloe's getting put into Action Comics.
Mm-hmm. And the Jimmy Olsen backup, right?
Yes. I believe it's 892 or 893 that's going to have Chloe in it. So that's coming up here pretty quickly. They promised it a long time ago, and it didn't really happen. The only thing we saw was Superman Origins?
Secret
Origins.
Secret Origins.
Was she in there?
No, they just had a note with initials on, or like his cast was signed by...
Oh.
It was like CS or something.
Yeah. But that was the only thing that was really... and it wasn't even like... her in there, obviously. So she's actually going to be in the Jimmy Olsen backups now, and that's going to be kind of cool to see how they incorporate her and everything. So especially since you're going to have a less Chloe on the season 10 of Smallville. So and then I mean there was a lot of talk about the things that are going on, and then some stuff coming up like Weird Worlds, which is going to be like a monster mashup book. Was there anything else that you guys saw in the story that you wanted to talk about that DC's announced?
Batman Inc.
Oh, Batman Incorporated would probably be something that we do need to mention, huh?
Possibly.
Grant Morrison talking about that was probably the most exciting thing out of all the panels. Like he the way he explained it just made it seem like the coolest book in the world. So,
which it's pretty much like almost like a team up book, but I mean it's Grant Morrison writing the team up book, so it's going to be completely bizarre. And it's like I think I saw something on
the way he explained it at the con was more like mm-hmm. they're going to be. He's going to be looking into the corporate side of Bruce Wayne / Batman because that's been kind of lacking as of late, and that was kind of going to be the focus of the book, and that's why.
Well, I saw an interview with him, and he went on to say more about it, and he was actually saying that it was going to try to bring in like all sorts of like international heroes.
Yeah.
And do kind of like, you know, and it was supposed to be at its core a team up book, like with the I guess kickstarting being that like what you were talking about the corporate side.
Yeah, and then they also talked about the Earth One stuff that they're doing coming up here. I'm super excited for the Geoff Johns book. I don't know about you guys, the Batman Earth One.
Yeah, I'm excited for both of them.
Mm-hmm. A Batman that can never do anything right and everything fails. That's a book I'm going to read.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. There was a lot of things that were already said, but that we didn't get to talk about. So those are kind of some of the highlights that we really want to talk about. So so anybody see the Thor trailer?
Yes.
So what do you guys think?
Yes.
Look pretty good.
I legitimately saw the Thor trailer.
Hey, I legitimately saw it. Just not at the show.
I meant at the convention.
Yes, you were the only one here who did. Good for you. You yes. sat in Hall H.
You can actually
you sat in Hall H for 12 hours.
That's right. And don't forget how I stood outside for 4 hours to get in. That's- don't forget that.
And you can actually hear a really, really in-depth discussion on those trailers over at flicksofdoom.com.
Now, I don't know. I don't know if you know this, but you know that the actors from the movie, they came out. They weren't in costume.
Really?
No, yeah. No,
we had to clarify this, guys. We really had to make sure that everyone did. Knows.
No, I had seen
in the big capes and
yeah, no, I had heard online people maybe possibly thought that they came out in costume, but let me just clarify that they definitely did not, and nor were they supposed to come out.
Well, as a fan, I am thoroughly disappointed with that news.
Do you want
know? I thought they were showing this trailer at the Mall of America, so.
What?
Along with the Barneys and the clowns, that's you know they're all supposed to come out in their costumes, right?
I see.
If you say so.
What do you guys think of the trailer, Thor trailer footage? What did you think of my wonderful description of it at geeksofdoom.com? What did you think of that?
The description was fantastic.
Was it amazing?
It was beautiful description. That's what it was.
Uh-huh.
But personally, the trailer didn't really do that much to excite me for the movie coming out.
Really? Honestly.
Yeah, for me personally.
Well.
Like, why?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It was just like any other trailer I've seen for a superhero movie. It's like dudes punching each other. And, you know, at its essence, I guess that's really what it is.
Actually, there was only one dude punching a lot
of
people.
Well, there was angry
and
guys
that dude
yelling
was
and stuff.
Four. Was punching people.
But I mean, I don't know. It was just so much. I guess when I watched it, I was just not that into it. I don't know.
Now let me ask you something. did you see the pictures that we took from the panel?
I don't know if I saw the pictures.
Well, you should go look at the pictures because I'm taking a survey because I want to know if Chris Hemsworth, if he is clean shaven or not. See, because when Tom was describing the panel, he said he didn't like that Chris Hemsworth came out clean shaven and not looking like Thor from the movie. And,
well, I mean, he wasn't in costume.
He wasn't in costume.
Well, no. The funniest part is that I don't think that that Tom has read a Thor comic book since probably 1990 because he's been shaved for quite a while now.
Think how that sounds. But no, but it was kind of amusing because he was not clean shaven. The actor on the panel was not clean shaven in the least bit. And he's having an argument with me because he's saying he came out clean shaven and he's supposed to be Thor with you know, facial hair. So anyway,
Ultimate Thor is the only one with facial hair right now.
Well, Thor in the movie has facial hair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's got daddy issues.
He shouldn't.
So what about you other guys? Did you see the footage?
I saw it. I enjoyed it. It got me excited for it.
I'm not watching it.
Well, bully for you. You can go and read your Thor comics.
I'm just not watching it.
Yeah, I'm pulling a Justin. That's all.
Yeah, and
spoiler alert. He's got a beard.
Yeah, exactly. It's facial hair. Right.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
You ruined the movie for me.
And he's also blonde, by the way, in case you didn't know.
He's no Hunter. He's got a.
In case that spoils the movie. Spoiler, Thor is blonde.
Speaking of things that we are anticipating watching, how about All-Star Superman and Batman Year One for a DC animated movie, guys? I'm really pumped. I'm really hoping they keep the art styles for both of them, actually.
Yeah.
Because both of them have amazing artists on them, so.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they're going to adapt Frank Quitely's art for animation.
Yeah. I mean, you can see how they would probably do Year One, but All-Star Superman is going to be tricky to animate.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know. It's like I'm almost worried about Dwayne McDuffie does a fantastic job, but at the same time, like All-Star Superman is pretty much perfect in my opinion. So like to adapt that in any way is probably not going to be. I'm probably not going to be completely pleased with it, to be honest.
Well, for Red Hood, they use Judd Winnick, so maybe they'll use Grant Morrison.
No, they've already said it's Dwayne McDuffie. That's a part of the actual story.
Yeah, but I mean,
read the story.
He could. I'm saying though, he could actually be involved as Dwayne McDuffie could actually be asking him for help and whatnot. I mean, the way DC's been working together quite a bit recently, so I mean.
Well, I know with Judd Winnick's situation, he actually pitched the idea for the DC animated.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like saying, hey, we want to remake we want to adapt your story. But with this one, it's seeming more like they're doing the adaption. It's like DC's decision as opposed to Grant Morrison's.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like we could look forward to it. In my opinion, the DC animateds haven't been bad and haven't disappointed me. I guess the only one that really, really disappointed me was the Green Lantern one. I mean, like they do a good job, but I mean, like when you take a story, and even with Batman Year One, both of those are kind of like I hold both of those sacred. So to see an adaptation, like I really don't want much changed, and like they're gonna have to change a lot with the Batman Year One one because I mean there's a lot of stuff going on there that I don't think. That DC is going to put a PG-13 rating on.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think they could adapt
they've
it over.
They've been pretty adult lately, too. I mean, Under the Red Hood was kind of adult. I mean,
yeah. But I mean, I don't think Catwoman's going to be a whore. And I don't think Jim Gordon's going to be cheating on his wife. Like, I doubt them taking that.
Not necessarily important to the story so much.
Yeah, but I mean, it does. It makes the tone and it sets it darker.
Yeah,
you know, that was kind of the point. But I mean, again, I mean, that probably won't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You think Batman will have a bladder spasm?
I hope to God not. I hope to God not.
They'll probably have two.
Yeah.
Same time.
Two bladders.
All right. You heard him. Yeah, I think Year One could really work well.
Yeah.
I think All-Star Superman is going to bring people back to Superman. I think As long as it's adapted correctly, I think that people are going to see why Superman's cool. Because I mean, that's what that book originally did for me. So,
mm-hmm. Do you think the ending is going to stay the same in an animated?
I think that they've been keeping pretty true to it, so I don't see why they wouldn't.
Well, I mean, a decent amount was changed in Red Hood, but. I mean that again. It wasn't.
But things that you would think they would change didn't change. I mean, these movies are getting more and more adult. It's surprising to.
I'm not saying even adult wise. I'm just saying that sort of twist that like at the end of All Star Superman, like the last bit of it, you know.
Yeah.
If some people haven't read the book, I don't want to spoil
that. Yeah, it's very meta at the end.
Yeah, and it's like, are they going to take that angle? With an animated, that's going to be interesting if they do.
That one, I would think that they'll probably end up changing a fair amount of it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be
just.
It's going to be a nuclear thing instead of the squid.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll. That one would be more for if they like really stay true to Quietly's art style.
And if it doesn't, I mean, like, well, you know, The Crisis on Two Earths was sort of an adaptation of the JLA story with the Earth 2 story.
Yeah, it was a mixture of like multiple stories. It was kind of like JLA animated series slash the actual comic series.
Well, see, that's the thing. All these DC animators are supposed to stick in the same universe.
Yeah.
Which is
not necessarily.
I don't think so. They said they use different people because they want to make sure that it's clear that they're in different universes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that Crisis on Two Earths, I think that one's supposed to tie into like JLU and
I think
that's the oddball out. That's the only one that really ties in with anything else. But we're kind of getting off topic.
Yeah, what I was trying to get at is Frank Quitely did the art on the Earth 2 story, and that the animation wasn't at all adapted.
Right, yeah. But I don't think they were – I don't think that was the point of it. I don't think they were trying to borrow from his art style the way that I hope they will with All-Star Super.
And see, that's what I'm wondering. Are they going to?
Yeah.
And that's the real question.
Yeah, because if they don't have more person writing it and they're not borrowing – Quietly's art style, what's the point of doing it?
Yeah. I mean, the story could stay the same, but...
Yeah.
And it's still a good story.
It is. But there are distinctly Morrison parts to it.
Absolutely.
Our Doom of the Week this week. So
that is Winding Gyre number 6, right?
Well, that's your personal Doom of the Week. Because every week Hunter makes a doom, as we talked about before. So that's going to be Winding Gyre number 6. Hey, you should have a segment like that every week, Hunter Camp. Your Hunter Camp doom of the week.
Okay.
But the actual doom of the week was Jimmy Palmiotti's Time Bomb number 1, which is put out by Radical. Radical, Radical. So
Cowabunga.
Since Hunter Camp is so talkative tonight, you want to give us a brief synopsis on Time Bomb number 1?
Well, this is to go into the creators. It's really what I paid attention to is the writing, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. But this was a really interesting story, and the way that it was set up was really cool. Like it kind of had almost like a Pulp Fiction style to it, in my opinion. Where it kind of like told you a bunch of different parts of the story, mm-hmm. and then brought them all together. It really cool. Started off with some people. I guess they were excavating like in a mine or something.
Yeah,
like, was that what they're doing? And then it crashes in, and there's this underground city where that I guess preserved Nazi heritage, and they found I guess what could be best described as an Omega missile. And while they're going through this and checking this out, it goes off, and then it basically spreads chemical warfare, and that's really the basis of it.
And
that's where it starts.
The two things that Hunter Camp looks for in a book: nudity and violence. And it's got both of them. So this
absolutely
is Hunter Camp's perfect book.
Yeah.
So how about we ask Mr. Jen Abrams what he thought about Time Bomb number one?
I actually found out about this book from Free Comic Book Day. And I liked the premise because, I mean, really they didn't show you a lot in the actual Radical preview. Because it was like, I think it was like 5 pages or something like that. And I just remember seeing that they excavate, yeah. And you see the city with the Nazi symbols, and I was sold on it, and like I ever just really enjoyed it. So when I picked it up, I pretty much, you know, I just expected a very interesting story, and I think that's pretty much what we got here, and I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, and that premise, like you talked about, really was what hooked me on it. Just being able to travel through time and trying to fix the timeline. I'm a big time travel fan, so that was something that piqued my interest. Plus, Jimmy Palmiotti is one of my favorite writers, so him and Justin Gray, and their collaborations are always great. So that's what got my attention. Now, Mr. Willie Gillis.
Yes.
What did you think about this?
I wasn't sold when it first started. But as soon as the bomb went off, that's when it kind of piqued my interest. It was a slow start, but it picked up. I enjoyed the whole book itself. Just looking forward to seeing how this is going to kind of wrap up.
Yeah, I had kind of
it's got 3 issues to wrap up. So. Yeah,
I had kind of the same reaction as you. Very exposition heavy at the beginning, like having to set up the world and explain everything. But once you know the rules, quote unquote, that's when it really picks up. And this is going to be a great trade, I think, once this is all collected. We should say that the art was done by Paul Galassi pencils by Paul Galassi, inks by Paul Galassi and Charles Yoakum, and pencils by Rain Barreto, and letters by John J. Hill. So that's the full creative team, if you're wondering. Mr. Henchman 21.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about this?
It was okay. I mean, I wasn't really, didn't know anything about it before you suggested it. And it's not, there's a lot of talking heads. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, it was decent. I wouldn't say it was great. I may pick it up in the trades. I kind of want to see how the whole story goes. But the art was pretty good. I was impressed by the art. Kind of reminded me a bit of who's doing Superman Secret Origins?
Gary Frank.
Reminded me a bit of that. He does a good bit, some good stuff with the talking. Then when the actual bomb goes off, there's some really good art in that whole section, just with the destruction of it.
Yeah.
I was impressed by that. But I think I may wait just for the whole story and see how it reads all at once.
Yeah, and that's similar to The Last Days of American Crime. That's kind of the same thing that I had with the first issue of that. And that's kind of like a 3-issue thing.
Is that third issue out yet?
No, it's not out yet.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
But Radicals, it seems like they're putting out a lot of similar work to this. It's got the premises are the things that are really catching my attention. Same thing with Last Days of American Crime, like I said. So I think kudos to Radical because they're taking these great creators and letting them run wild. But yeah, I think this issue, now that all the exposition is out of the way and all the setting up of the world, I think the next issue is really going to be an improvement, I should say. And I enjoyed it, but it was a slow start. We had a Doom of the Week. Now let's have a Doom of the Month, Hunter Camp.
Okay.
And this is going to be Asterios Polyp by one of Hunter's favorite creators. Is that correct, Hunter Camp?
I'd say so.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us about it?
About Asterios Polyp?
And your favorite creator. How about that?
David, I say Mazzucchelli, but I'm sure it's Mazzucchelli.
I think Jen says Mazzucchelli, too.
Okay.
What do you say, Willie Gillis?
I say whatever y'all want to say.
What do you say? What do you say, Chris McDavid?
I don't know, Mazzucchelli.
All right. What do you say, Eve?
It's actually pronounced Mazzucchelli.
Oh!
It depends on what the creator, how he says it. Oh. It could be Americanized, so he could say Celli, but it is pronounced Kelly.
Oh. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, tell
us. Right.
For the listeners out there who don't know his previous work, Hunter Camp, what else has he done?
Well, the something we talked about earlier, actually, was Batman Year One with Frank Miller. He did the art for that, and we were talking about the adaptation of that. I don't know if you guys remember. But, yeah, that's where I know him from, and I guess that's where a lot of people are going to know him from.
That's
I mean,
right.
He's had plenty of other works as yeah. well. A Serious Polyp is – it's hard to explain exactly, you know, what it is because it's so – it's almost so mind-bending. It's more about this – this character who is kind of in his middle age, he is a professor and he's an architect, and it's really what it really boils down to and what it's really about is this kind of this cynical guy and how he views the world and different philosophies that he subscribes to, that he knows about. He's an extremely intelligent character. But it's really just his life. And that's what the book is really. It's got definitely the indie feel. It's definitely not something that I would consider mainstream at all. But to me personally, this was more about the art and the appreciation of what Mazzucchelli did with everything in there, like taking different topics, you know, relating different, like again, different philosophies, and putting it on paper and putting it beautifully on paper. A lot of the story centers around a you know, architecture, because that's what he is involved in. So really that's kind of the basis for the book, and that's everything plays off of that, and that's the design and that's the style. It's definitely a modern feel to it, and it's really cool. But I mean, like, what did you guys think? What was your opinions of it?
I think it also has a lot to do with how he plays off of the girl that he falls in love with, and mm-hmm. the difference between their perspectives completely. Because when you look at the art, obviously, it's very clearly shown by the fact that he's very angular and she's very rounded and everything like that. Mm. And I think that not only that, but it also in the things that they say and the way that they do things, it also is very evident that that they're very different people, but yet they, for some reason, are drawn to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So
But he does that. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but he does that with every different character. You know, each one has a distinct style, and that's really.
But cool. But I also think that those are so clearly starkly different that it's mm-hmm. it's obviously made for a certain reason. I mean, they even talk about it in our conversations about how they disagree on something a lot of times, and it comes even more evident when they're having those conversations that he's very angular and she's very circular. Mm-hmm. So, it even comes down to where their entire bodies are made of shapes that are angular or circular. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, honestly, I think it just the way that I agree with you, the art is a big factor on it, but I think he complements the art with the story matching it in a kind of a psychological way where you have to kind of think about it for more than a couple minutes, and it's definitely an indie book, and it's definitely not something that someone that only reads Batman or only reads Spider-Man will probably enjoy, or they probably would, but they probably would never try it. But you know what I mean? So it's definitely something that I'm glad that I picked up, and I'm glad that I read it, and I definitely think it's something that you can benefit from reading more than once as well. So
yeah,
definitely. On the reread, I think if you want to talk about this book, and if you want to talk about comics as a work of art, this is a book to point that out. Mazzucchelli does some amazing things with the art, and specifically, I don't pay a lot of attention to lettering a lot of times, but every character has their own font, has their own word balloons. It was something that really stuck out to me and was really impressive to me. Just the whole thing, just the different styles of art that he uses throughout, whether it be Asterios' girlfriend has an almost manga feel to her. It was a very impressive book. I'm looking forward to rereading it because I think any really good book has to stand up to multiple readings for me. And I think the next time I read it, I'm going to pick up things I didn't pick up the first time, and when I read it a third time, I'll pick up still more things. I think that's something that really sets this apart from other books.
I read this book again on no sleep after Red Eye Flight, but even though I was really tired and needed to go to sleep, I still stayed up to read it because it was that engrossing. It was just so involved, and it's definitely not the kind of comic book that you can like breeze through. Like you definitely have to pay attention not only to the dialogue but like what the art means. Like for instance, when Asterios and his wife Hannah, like whenever they have a disagreement, like they'll show you, well, it's mostly prominent in their disagreements is that he'll be in like blue and she'll be in red, and then he'll be drawn. Yeah, you'll see him in like square. His body is drawn in squares, whereas her is like very curvy and like almost like a painting. So they're always trying to show you the dichotomy between the couple. And there is a passage in the comic where he talks about how people are drawn together and how sometimes it's easy. Like sometimes people getting along is easy, but sometimes it's forced. And he said something like, you know, but still we try. Like, you know, as humans, like we still try to like get to know one another. So, like his major issue is that it starts out right in the beginning that he was an identical twin, but he was the only one who survived. So yeah. It's like he's living this whole life, you know, as like a half of one person. So you see, he's like very rigid, like he, you know,
He even says like, you know, I wonder what would happen if my twin survived instead of me.
Right. Yeah. And there's a segment where you see what would happen with his twin, because they were saying that, twins that are separated at birth, they tend to end up living similar lives, like similar professions, getting married the same age, having the same amount of children. And so like his twin, you know, would have gone on to be an architect, except while he was interlinear, you know, everything has to have a purpose, everything has to fit a certain way, it's all about lines and things like that. His twin would go on to design in like curves and things like that. And I kind of took Hannah to be, you know, a manifestation almost of his twin, because that's how she was. Like, she was into like curves, like she's a sculptor. So her thing is about the aesthetics and not about, function. They were like, you know, function and form, you know, that's like their relationship. And, it was like a really wonderful journey to, you know, from, you know, you get his, background, his, you know, growing up, and then you see her background, her growing up, and how they came together. I like how, I don't want to say how they ended it, but like, well, I'm not going to say I think Chris said this on Twitter that he didn't like the last 7 pages or something.
I really loved it until the end.
And I don't know if you mean the event or the conversation, like, because I love the conversation that takes place at the end.
I'm a hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
What?
It's a very happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then not. So it was.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you. It had me going, and I was just like, wow, you know, like it almost felt like everyone, you know, there's lessons to be learned in life, and, you know, you felt like lessons had been learned, and then you get to the ending, and then it really blew my mind. I'm like, wait, now I have to reassess everything.
Right. Yeah. And I know, because there's a discussion earlier in the book that kind of foreshadows what happens at the end.
Yeah, but
it was very out of left field.
Yeah, it almost turned into like a science fiction, like, right? It was like, oh, wait, science fiction ending.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So.
Yeah,
I like the ending, guys.
I do too.
Yeah, you would, Hunter Kent.
Yeah,
I do too. I don't know. I just really enjoyed the whole book, and I thought I always love twist endings that you can't see coming. I hate it when it's a twist ending that's like forecasted a mile away, but when it's something you can't see coming at all.
Wait, I thought you loved Inception. Wasn't that something you the twist ending?
We're not getting into that conversation.
I just love bringing it up when his opinions contradict those of the review for Inception. So.
Well, I wanted to say I was reading Scott McCloud. Scott McCloud, if you don't know, he did Understanding Comics, and my favorite comics teacher, like just about the form, the medium of comics, is Scott McCloud, and he had a couple words to say about this book that we reviewed here. He says Mazzucchelli is a humanist first, and I think he loves all the fools that populate his story, and he has no interest in passing divine judgment. He's just chronicling the dizzying dance of futility we all participate in. Each of us to our own steps and our own tune as we try to make sense of the unfathomable. And that's what I liked about the book as well. Just, it's not passing judgment. It's just saying, okay, we're all trying to get along in this crazy world. And here's some events that happened. So that's something that I liked about the book. Mr. Yeah. Willie Gillis?
Yeah.
What did you think about Asterios Polo?
I guess I'll start off with just as an art form itself, it's something new and kind of fresh that a lot of people hadn't seen before. It's kind of more like, hey, this is the architecture of comics, and you kind of get to see how the way he pretty much draws these characters and how they're so different from anything we've ever seen. So as an art standpoint, I really enjoy that. The story itself, I like the story. Some parts of it were a little bit too much for me. I don't know how to explain it. You really have to kind of be focused on just reading the book, and if you're doing other things, you kind of get out of it. But I pretty much read it straightforward. I kind of didn't stop doing anything. I just read it straightforward, and I enjoyed the book itself as a whole. I kind of want to go back and read it again just to see if I missed anything, like little things. But, I mean, other than that, the book was really solid. And I think it's something that if you're not a comics fan, I think you should read it. But if you are, you definitely should be reading it.
Yeah, I would put this up there with Blankets and those type of books that you...
Yeah, it's definitely...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Like a pop fiction kind of thing that...
Yeah.
I think though you know there's a lot of things that you miss on the first read
because you're
trying to follow the story that there's flashbacks and then there's like fantasy sequences and such, and you know you're trying to differentiate like what is a flashback and what is you know reality as opposed to like what is his thoughts, his memories, like he says memories are like recreations, or is that what he says? Like they're recreations, or yeah, they're not
recordings.
They're like recreations of events. So you're like trying to keep track of that, and so therefore you might not get the subtleties like in the art. You know, like some of the things, like you know, I didn't catch in the beginning. Like I didn't like catch about like when he's. He's talking about something, and then it's like he's got those figures above his head, the five platonic solids. Mm-hmm. And, like, that didn't mean anything to me when I first saw it. And then, like, at the end, where you see, like, she makes those sculptures, and it's the five platonic solids. Like, then I was like, wait, that was something to do with him. You know, it was like, you could see, like, as the journey goes on, it's like, you know, they're learning, they're finally like learning about each other, because like in the story you could see he's like he's a narcissist, he's self-centered, he thinks he's right all the time, he's dismissive of her, he never compliments her on her work, he thinks he knows better than everyone else, like everyone he meets the composer and he's like trying to act like he knows more about music than the composer does. And she was like, she said to him, like, why do you think you know more than everyone? Like, the guy's a composer. Like, why would you think you know more about music than him, you know? And so I felt like their whole relationship was them, like, not really understanding each other. And then it took, like, them to kind of go through, you know, hardships to finally really understand each other.
Yeah, that quote was, every memory is a recreation, not a playback.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's not like you could press rewind and relive that memory and be like, oh, that's what happened. It's a recreation in your mind of what happened. And I think when he says that, she's saying, you never pay attention. You know, you don't pay attention enough. Like, there's all these panels of her, like, and she's wearing different clothes, so you know it's, like, different time periods. And she's going, like, you don't really pay attention, or, you know, you really should pay attention more. And it was all about him not paying attention.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm along the same lines as Willie. The story, I thought it was okay. It didn't blow me away. But the way that the story was told is the star of the book for me. The way that he uses the narrative techniques and everything that everyone has said here today, that's what I really love. And it shows you the power of the medium of comic books and the art of storytelling. So that's what is the true star for me. This is the second time I've read this. I actually read it when it originally came out, July of 2009, and I really enjoyed it then. But rereading it, I hadn't read it in a year, so that was, I was a little bit fuzzy on some of the things, but I did get, I think I understood the story better, and I got some more out of it the second time that I read it. So, and I actually want to read it again. So,
I think we should point out that too, it's like he's Greek, he's Greek heritage, and he's an architect, and his style of architecture is like ancient Greece, you know, which is, you know, very popular style of architecture. And then a lot of the story is like Greek mythology is used to sort of mirror his modern day experiences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know,
mythology and philosophy and
absolutely
right
arts and everything.
Yeah,
I mean, there's that whole sequence where I don't remember if he was like dreaming it. He might have been dreaming it, but like he dreams of himself being in that play. You know what I mean? And it's like I had to look at that like a bunch of times. Like I didn't realize it at first. I thought he was just having some weird dream. And then I had to look at it like a lot. And then I realized like I think he's dreaming of the play, but he's putting himself and Hannah in it, and it's sort of like he's making those same mistakes as Orpheus does, you know? Like, and you see, like, you know, he's tempted by the sirens, and that was like, remember in the beginning of the book, like, he was like sleeping with his students and things like that, and he said something about being tempted, like, oh, don't tempt me, or whatever, you know? I don't know. So it was like, but I had to look at it like so many times and go like, what does this mean? And like when I stop focusing on like every little, like when I read a comic book, my first order of business is like to get the dialogue. I'm very like, oh, like on the surface, like, okay, let me just like figure out what's going on in the story. And then a book like this, when I reread it, that's when I go back and go, okay, What did they really mean by what they said? And then what did this piece of art, like, you know, when they put art in, like, in comic books, the art always has some kind of meaning to it. And it's like, why, all right, why did they put this? Like, if it's a close-up on an ashtray, like, why is there a close-up on an ashtray? Like, that is supposed to be telling us something. So a book like this, I think you could spend, like, hours upon hours dissecting this book. I mean, it's almost like, you know, when you first read Watchmen, how you like read it a whole bunch of times because there's like layers upon layers of like information in it. I feel like that's how this story is, except like, I don't know who said it, but it's like, it's not a superhero story. It's like it's just a man's life. It's just like a simple story about a man's life. And, but yet it has all these layers to it, like these complications and
it's a kind of comic that we don't see enough.
No.
Yeah. And you know how long it's taken him to get this out. So it's kind of like, you know, we're not going to get another one of these for a while. Probably.
This is his opus, you know, this is definitely when I was reading this, I was like, wow, this really is his like masterpiece.
And it's getting critical acclaim everywhere too. Like everyone's loving it, so,
and rightfully so.
Yeah, and it's definitely a great piece of work, and I'm really I'm glad I read it. And if he wasn't an architect, I would be surprised, because honestly, everything in there, like the whole book is almost a piece of architecture. Like the way he plans it out and everything. I mean, there's not one detail. Like you said earlier, Chris, like the lettering, the, you know, this, that, and everything. Everything is just completely and totally planned out and meticulous. And that's why you could multiple times read that book and find something different each time.
Could you imagine if you handed this to some, either a comic reader or a comic creator, like in the 40s or the 50s, and said, here, this is what the medium has the potential to be. I think it would just blow people's minds.
Right.
I want to know if Stan Lee has read this.
I think Mazzucchelli would also probably have been burned at the stake, you know, in the witch hunts in the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
The 50s, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, that might happen now if you show that to some of the comic creators from the 50s. How dare he actually do something good
if we made a time machine, I guess we could try it.
Right.
Yeah.
DeLorean.
Let's make a time bomb, guys.
That's like make a time bomb.
Time bomb. Oh, sorry. Wrong song.
What?
Yeah, completely different.
The last segment we're going to have is our pull list of doom. These are the comics that we're looking forward to releasing August 4th, 2010. I'll start off. You got to go Super God number 4 if it comes out. I have to put that on my pull list.
Yeah.
And Deadpool number 1000, because I love Deadpool.
And there actually have been 1,000 Deadpool across all of them, right?
Yeah, if you
I think that's true.
At the rate that Marvel has been putting them out recently,
every appearance, that's not, if you count every appearance, yeah, that is correct.
There's probably actually 3,000.
Yeah, there's probably that.
Entirely possible.
Yeah,
and they'll be up to 10,000 by next month.
Yeah, well, think about when the Deadpool movie comes out. They're going to be even more.
They're going to be stupid with content.
Yeah, I was going to say they pumped up like Captain America just recently. Now, when they pump up Deadpool, it's going to be like 20 bucks.
Oh my goodness.
No!
When the Wolverine one came out.
No. Jen?
Shoot myself.
All right. So I would put the Image United number 3, but that's about the same thing as Super God. So actually probably worse. So I'm not even sure if that's ever going to come out. But I went ahead and put my biggest pulls right that I'm excited about is Hellboy with Storm number 2, which I'm pumped. I've been just dived right into Hellboy, and it's been fun so far. And BPRD, and they've both been great. So the other book I put on there was Jonah Hex 58, and Jonah Hex is just a great book, and you can jump on at any point in time and just read. And Hunter.
Okay. that the Jonah Hex, that is going to be our Doom of the Week next week. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So if nobody's picking it up and they want to hear us talk about it, you know, go pick that up. But personally, I think that neither one of the ones that I'm really – the ones that I picked are – I'm kind of cautious towards. Batman Odyssey number 2, which is the Neil Adams written and drawn book, and that's the only reason I'm picking up.
I don't think Hunter quite understands the purpose of this.
No, I don't. Okay. Batman Odyssey number 2, Young Allies number 3.
All right. I am picking up a couple of second issues, Casanova number 2. From Matt Fraction, and I believe it was Fabio Moon who did the first one. This is just a reprint of the series that came out from Image a couple of years ago, but it's in got a new color. It's the first issue is awesome. This one should be very good as well. And then Gorilla Man number 2, because it's got a big gorilla, and he's talking and he wears tux, and it's awesome.
I'm excited for that book.
I'm getting a couple of early birthday presents from Jeff Lemire. I'm getting Sweet Tooth number 12. And from Mark Waid, I'm getting Irredeemable number 16.
So that was it for this episode of Comics of Doom. We'd like to thank Miss Eve of Doom for joining us. Thanks, Eve.
Welcome.
Thanks for staying awake after your 9-hour flight. And if you'd like to join us again next month, Eve, I know you've read Scott Pilgrim.
I have.
And that's what we're going to be dooming next month, or this month for August, I should say. Are we doing it at the end of August, or are we doing it at the beginning of September, boys?
Why don't we just do it next week?
Yay!
Yeah, seriously.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Before the movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually not a bad idea.
That thing. All right. Well, Chris McDavid has just changed it, boys, so everyone go out and read 6 volumes tonight as you're listening to this, and you can listen to our review of Scott Pilgrim. So
and make sure you guys go back on the feed and check out Under the Red Hood that we recorded when we talked about the DC animated film.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to keep doing that when we have any kind of movies that come out. We're going to have a separate episode for you guys to go listen to with us talking about it, so we have enough time to actually talk about what we thought completely without
Hunter Camp won't be on them because he doesn't watch those. So
Scott Pilgrim?
He didn't listen long enough.
Yep, we're going to have a Scott Pilgrim episode as well.
Yay! So
guys, this is not Flicks of Doom.
Stay tuned for that, guys. I have been Justin Vactor. He has been Hunter Camp. He's been Chris McDavid. That's Guy Jen over there and Willie Gillis and Eve. And your comics have just been doomed? Wait, you have a birthday?
Yeah, August 5th.
What?
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
Meet a serious polyp.
Okay.
Where do you start here?
Someone snorted.
It's always me.
That's me.
What about a serious polyp, Hunter Camp?
Well, he's a middle-aged architect and teacher. He is an aesthete. I don't know how to say that. What is that? Aesthete?
Aesthetic?
What are you reading?
Aesthetic?
That's not aesthetic. He's got armor on. Sorry, guys.
No.
Edit point.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
That's an outtake.